Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest today, Joel Varty. The reading you did for us just before the break was from the viewpoint of a homeless guy in the city. Is the book structured that way? Do we hear from lots of different people in the same circumstance?
Yeah, it's an interesting setup because it's written from the first person point of view, but it shifts. So each chapter could be a different point of view from a different person, but it's all, you know, they're the first person in the story. So it tells you sort of the name of the person that you're now in the eyes of. And that was from, Herb, the homeless guy. He was an accountant well before this all happened. And he's already lost everything in his life, well, kind of, except for himself. It's in contrast to Jonah, the main character, who already has a lot to lose. He's still got his family, still got his job, and that's all about to disappear.
And we go back to Joel in between all these other viewpoints, do we?
To Jonah, yes.
Yeah, to Jonah.
He's the main character throughout it, and it's mostly from his point of view. But it's almost more interesting to read the other characters for me now, going back to it, you know, after so many years since I've written it. It's like, oh yeah, Herb's a really cool guy. Yeah. I kind of like him because he changes. He has the most to gain from anything that changes in his life.
Oh, interesting way to to approach it. We were introduced to you, Joel, through a colleague of ours in our group, the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group, who shares with you an interest in theater, singing, acting, all that stuff. Does your theatrical experience influence your writing?
I think so. There's the wish to express oneself. Writing is one part of it, performing is another for me, and singing, music, it all sort of gains together. And when I write, I like to read it out loud as much as I can to sort of see how it sounds coming off the page. I know that when we read, we don't normally do that way, but I like to have it kind of sings to me in my head. So that it's a big part of my life. And it's just, you know, creative expression is something I crave. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Do you write scripts as well?
I haven't, no, but I enjoy reading them. So maybe someday I'll write a play. Yeah. See how that goes.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Maybe you'll make this one into a play or a screenplay.
My brother read Descendant and he said, Joel, it's either a TV series or a movie in my head. I could see every bit of it, and I really enjoyed hearing what the movie would be like from his point of view. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. There's something to put on your list of to-dos.
Yeah, maybe.
So how does the novel writing process work for you? Do you write every day?
I wish I could nail it down like that. I thought I had it down. You know, I thought I had, I like to write an outline, and then I sort of try to write either within that, or I know when I've gone past it or outside of it to give me a little bit of scale. That's the hardest, the biggest difference between writing short stories, which, you know, you can crank out in one sitting, versus a novel, which is going to, you know, you're going to take you a year or so or more to kind of put it all together. And you might have other things that crop up, right? So you don't want to lose any of your ideas. So it's a combination of outlining, keeping all the notes and all all the pieces of the fluid process together in your head and writing it all down. That's the thing. We'd like to keep everything in our head, but you just can't keep all this in your head at once, right? So you've already gone past and you come back to it 6 months later, or time has passed because, you know, life happens. So yeah, I wish I could write every day, but I don't. I kind of go in spurts, which maybe it's the same or different. I don't know. Anyone who's given me advice on it, it's never seemed to work quite for me.
Yeah, well, all the advice I've heard from successful writers is to write every day. But like you, life gets in the way. And, you know, as much as we'd like to, that's not always possible. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned short stories a few times. Do you write nonfiction too?
I do, yeah. Mostly stuff from my own childhood. I started off just writing it down so I wouldn't forget. You know, you tell stories and then the number of stories seems to get smaller. I thought, you know, I don't want to forget these things that happened, because some of them are funny and some of them I want my kids to know or whatever. They're just interesting. So you just kind of write it out there. You just kind of have to get it out. And so I've been working on a bunch of those. And I'd like to, at some point, I think I'd like to publish them just to see what people... It's not like a genre like I would write in fiction, but it's something I wonder what people will say about.
So more of a memoir.
Yeah.
And the short stories, do these memoir pieces make their way into short stories, or do you always deal with fictional characters?
It's interesting. It's kind of half and half. So I'm sitting on a collection of Christmas stories, which I'd like to release at some point. And some of those have some real truth in there, but they're always, I try to say this is fiction, because, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, that could kind of be that person. That could kind of be that person. It's like, nope, it's fiction. Let's just set that aside. Here's these other ones. They are not fiction, but there might be some exaggerations, but I try not to, you know, family members are fine, but I'll try not to keep outside people, let those in too far.
Well, it'd be lovely to hear you read again. What are you going to read this time?
I'd like to read from something. This is something I haven't published yet, but I just want to see what the reaction is to it. It's called Lunchtime Farm Stories. So I work in Toronto. I'm a software developer and architect, and I work with a whole lot of people that have never been on a farm, never really been out of Toronto. Some of them have, some of them haven't. But there's always a lot of different reactions to what happens in farm life. So I'm going to read you a little bit of Lunchtime Farm Stories.
And is this a short story or a piece from a novel?
These are short stories, and these are creative nonfiction, we'll call them. Okay?
Okay.
All right. These stories are all true. They've been changed slightly as memories change, I am sure. But the essential points are all true. There are certain exaggerations, but the stories really require this to survive more than a few tellings, since they're often told to the same people over and over again, and you know how that can be. You have to keep it fresh. In these stories, quotation marks really mean so-and-so probably said something about such-and-such, so don't whine if you're the one who said something silly that's still funny. These are stories about me getting covered in mud, manure, and slime whilst growing up on the farm. I began recounting these tales from back home when I went away to work in the city, and the lunchroom conversation needed a little spicing up. I think it started with my coworker asking me what kind of horse a steer was. Rest assured that on the farm, animals are sacred creatures, but they are rarely pets, and as such, they usually don't have names. Or rather, one might name a farm animal, but when it dies, one might just give it the same name as its predecessor so you don't forget. I've heard this actually works best with sheep and goats, but we never keep these animals. We never didn't have them, so I don't know about that. Actually, it's rather unfortunate, since apparently sheep and goats are quite funny. As you might have guessed, I grew up on a family farm and had many adventures that often seemed rather inconvenient at the time, but in retrospect are quite entertaining to others. I think it's because we're all warmer and covered in less manure right now. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Enjoy. And the first story is called Pigs, and I'll just read a bit of Pigs. The single hardest thing to do on a farm is to get animals to go where you want them to when you need to shoot them. We've had a few pigs over the years that we would raise over the summer months and dress in the fall, which means to kill them and cut them into chops and roast. The worst part of the job was to try and get the thing out of its pen so we could bleed it out in the yard and hang it from the tractor from the front-end loader. One year, when I was about 12 or 13, I managed to convince my father that I ought to shoot the pig this time, knowing full well that my brother would need to be the one to get in there in the manure with this crazed 300-pound pig, trying to get it out of its hole where I would get the privilege and glory of delivering the awesome death blow. Now he, my brother, managed to scare it out of the pen after some work, only taking enough time to let me get seriously frightened about whether I was going to hit this animal or shoot my toe off. And a co-worker says to me, "Well, why didn't you just cut the pig's throat?" And I said, "Are you crazy? It sounds like a good way to get your arm sliced up, and the pig would still be running around with blood spurting all over the place, probably spooking the cows into a stampede, which is not good." So I stood there while that pig stuck its head out the barn door, sniffing its first smell of the outside world since being a piglet. My brother yelled at me, "Shoot it now!" And the pig bolted. That damn pig took off like a racehorse with a squeal that scared the crap right out of me. And I managed, through my brilliance and quick thinking, to hit it in the shoulder, just over the leg, with a .22. But that didn't slow him up much. He made it to the corner of the barn and had a shot at making it to the open fields before his brief freedom was interrupted by my father, who had been acting quickly whilst my brother and I stared at the power of a pig in motion. Slam! The sledgehammer came down on the pig's head. 300 pounds of pig meets 15 pounds of steel behind the clout of my dad's full swing. That pig was still running strong, but was a little dazed now. Three more steps and he flopped over onto his side. Showing no hesitation, my dad whipped out his knife and cut that pig's throat cheek to cheek. It lay there, motionless. And now we come to the whole point of the story, which began as a response to the statement made by a co-worker. The heart may beat for a while after you're dead, but the lungs don't work at all. Nope, I learned that lesson when I was 12 years old. My father decided it was a good time to teach young Joel and his brothers about anatomy and extracted the lungs, heart, and lots of blood from the pig's chest cavity, showing us what really happens when an animal is in the process of becoming dead. "Can I hold it?" I said. And so I stood there, transfixed, while both the lungs and the heart quivered in my hand until they both eventually were still. The heart lasted several seconds, probably closer to minutes. My only other memory of that event happened several months later when my parents had some friends over from Toronto for dinner, and a small chunk of lead was unceremoniously spat out of the mouth of one of our guests. "What was that?" he exclaimed. "I want it!" my brother and I both shouted as we dived to retrieve the bullet from the table.
Oh, good heavens. Remind me not to come to dinner. Anyway, many thanks, Joel, for coming in today and telling us all about your books and reading for us. Where are your books available?
They are available on Amazon.ca and Amazon.com.
And you want to give us the titles again?
Sure. My novel that I read from first was How the World Ends. There's also the other novel, Descendant, and a group of short stories called Rutting of the Downtown Stags.
There you go. So, listeners, you can go to Amazon and download any of those. And if you'd like to connect with us to give comments about the program or let us know who you think we might interview in future weeks, contact us by email, wordonthehills@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us for another program next week.